Chapter 18 The Rodeo. Evan and I couldn't put Evan's theory to the test until we got to the rodeo that night, as that's where his suspects were. My parents drove us there, along with Ray and Karina, who wanted to see the rodeo as well. Summer, Candace, and Pete opted out. Summer and Candace wanted to be at the house for when JJ got back from being rescued, whenever that might be. Plus, Ranger O had emailed us her list of ranchers with a history of antagonism toward wildlife conservation measures, and it was quite long. Summer had volunteered to investigate the names while I went to the rodeo. Besides, she had said, she wasn't a big fan of rodeos, given how animals were treated there. Meanwhile, Pete claimed he didn't want to go because, as he said, I can't think of anything I'd like to do less than spending 2 hours watching people wrestle with animals in the mud. We were a little late getting to the rodeo, as it took me a very long time to get clean again. I had to shampoo my hair 10 times to get every last bit of dirt out of it. By the time we arrived, the first event, bronco busting, was already well underway. Cowboys were doing their best not to get thrown off untamed horses as they bucked wildly about in the ring. It was obviously extremely difficult. Earlier that day, I'd had a hard enough time staying atop a horse running in a straight line, let alone one actively trying to throw me. The longest anyone had managed to last so far was 8.6 seconds, which Evan assured me was quite good. Once the cowboy was thrown, he had a brand new problem, getting out of the way before the bronco accidentally stomped on him. To aid him, 3 rodeo clowns were stationed around the ring. 2 would distract the horse, while the 3rd would help the rider to safety. Although the clowns were dressed comically, with cartoonish clothing and painted faces, their work was quite serious and potentially deadly, especially during the bull riding competitions, which were scheduled for later in the evening. This was not my first rodeo. I had been to the annual one in San Antonio, but that had been held in a giant indoor arena and thus felt more like a professional sporting event. The West Yellowstone Rodeo was a down-home affair. While a few journeyman riders were participating, most of the competitors were locals. In fact, many weren't much older than me. The rodeo took place in a large field on the western outskirts of town. The arena was a great oval of dirt, surrounded by a metal fence bedecked with advertisements for local businesses. Horseback riding stables, mom-and-pop restaurants, and whitewater rafting guides. One side of the arena was flanked by the stands, which were the same sort of metal bleachers we had at our local high school football stadium. The dirt in the center was devoid of so much as a blade of grass, having been churned by thousands of hooves. At one end of the oval were a series of metal chutes where the contestants and the animals they were either going to ride or chase waited before the events. Volunteers loaded them into each chute through a gate on one end, and then, at the appropriate time, a gate on the other end would fly open, releasing them into the arena. Beyond the chutes was the staging area, where dozens of horses, bulls, and calves were kept in pens. And beyond that was the dirt parking area for animal delivery, filled with hundreds of livestock trailers, each of which was hooked to the bumper of a pickup truck. The parking lot for the fans was located at the opposite side of the arena. It was really just a large, recently mowed field. Behind the viewing stands was the food court. Dozens of booths, almost every one of which was serving barbecue that claimed to be the best in Yellowstone. Although there was also soft-serve ice cream and homemade lemonade, and one stand serving Chinese food, which seemed to be selling extremely well, given that it was the only dinner option for people who didn't want barbecue. The biggest line of all, by far, was for beer. And since there was so much beer being drunk, there were a great number of porta-potties. These were all arranged in a line at the end of the arena near the animal pens. They try to keep everything that stinks in the same place, Evan explained. It seemed that the rodeo was the main social event in town. While a good portion of the crowd was tourists, much of the local community had turned out as well. Just as many people were hanging out in the food court as were watching the rodeo itself. All around us, people were greeting friends and catching up. Evan's entire middle school appeared to be there. I spotted Jasmine, Arturo, and Daisy, who had come separately from us, socializing with their friends. There was also a large, rowdy group of locals about Zach's age, and I guessed that if Zach hadn't been trapped in the mine right then he probably would have been hanging out at the rodeo too. Evan and I got pulled pork sandwiches for dinner, which took a while, because the lines were long, and Evan had to say hi to everyone he ran into. The barrel racing was just beginning as we slid into our seats in the bleachers. Since Evan's parents had come early with Melissa, they had saved us most of a row. Evan sat next to them, while I sat between him and my parents. Ray and Karina were at the end. A sophomore girl from the local high school was making her debut in the event. As far as I could tell, she was an excellent rider, but according to the announcer, her time wasn't that good. Still, the audience cheered for her supportively. "Your sister's riding third," Heidi told Evan. "You almost missed her." "You guys are baiting bears on our property, aren't you?" Evan asked. His parents both turned to him, startled. Their reaction betrayed that they knew exactly what he was talking about, even though they tried to act like they didn't. "I don't know what you mean," Sydney said, but he wasn't a good enough actor to make it sound convincing.
"Don't lie to me," Evan snapped. "I even know why you did it. You wanted JJ to see some bears, so he'd think our property would be the perfect place for a safari lodge."
Evan had explained his line of thinking to me in detail right after he'd found the bear bait on his property. The site was relatively close to the ranch house, which ruled out any hunters. If hunters were going to take all the trouble to bait bears, they would have done it someplace remote and far from humans, not in a place where they could easily be seen, and their guns would certainly be heard. Meanwhile, Sasquatch hadn't started to show up on a regular basis at the Oy Vey Corral until only a few days before we all arrived. Evan had only seen bears that close to his home a few times in his entire life, so it had seemed suspicious that one was suddenly coming by right when a potential bidder for the property was visiting. Thus, the Spooners and Jericho hadn't been involved at all. The garbage had simply been dumped in their trash cans to keep it away from the Krautheimer property. Sydney glanced at me and the rest of us on the bleacher bench. My parents were close enough to overhear their conversation, although Ray and Karina didn't seem to be aware of it. They were farther down the bench and completely focused on the rodeo.
"You told everyone?" Sydney asked Evan, obviously upset.
"We happened to be there when he found the bait," Mom explained, to take the blame off Evan. "We were all on the way back from the mine." Now Sydney looked less shocked and more upset.
"Do the McCrackens know too?"
"JJ doesn't," Dad said, "but that's because he's still trapped in the mine." Sydney took a deep breath. He seemed really upset with Evan, and also with himself. In the arena below, another rider and her horse blasted out of the gate and started racing around the barrels. Heidi spoke, more to my parents and me than Evan.
"The baiting wasn't bringing any harm to the bears. It was only to give you all a show, let you see some of our amazing wildlife. We only thought it'd bring a black bear or two, not a grizzly like Sasquatch, and we certainly had no idea he'd come into the house."
"That had nothing to do with the baiting," Sydney said.
"Like heck it didn't," Evan exclaimed. "Sasquatch would never have come anywhere near our house if it wasn't for the baiting. And then he obviously started to connect humans with food. Now Fish and Wildlife's probably going to have to put him down."
The Krautheimers looked around nervously to see if anyone else in the stands had overheard this, but everyone was focused on the rodeo, and the crowd was too loud and raucous for eavesdropping. The rider finished up her race with a solid time, and the crowd cheered.
"That's not going to happen," Heidi told Evan. "We've learned our lesson. We're not going to set out any more bait. It won't take long for Sasquatch to realize this, and then he'll stop coming around."
"Maybe not," Evan said. "In fact, if Sasquatch stops finding food at your baiting site, he might be more likely to come to our house, or someone else's. I can't believe you did something this stupid."
Both of his parents looked as though he had slapped them across the face. They certainly would have been upset by the insult under normal circumstances, but it was worse to have Evan say it in front of me and my parents. However, before they could respond, the rodeo announcer's voice rang out over the public address system.
"Our next rider is a local favorite," he said. "She's been competing here since she was only 14 years old, and now she's one of our shining stars. Give it up for Melissa Krautheimer."
The crowd went wild. Lots of people in the stand seemed to know the Krautheimers, and many shouted words of support to Heidi and Sydney. "Watch your sister ride," Heidi told Evan. "Then we'll talk." We all turned our attention to the arena. Melissa was astride Sassafras in one of the loading chutes. While the crowd cheered, she waved her cowboy hat and smiled brightly, then looked into the stands toward her parents. They gamely waved back at her.
"Go, Melissa," Sydney yelled.
"We love you," Heidi called.
Many tourists in the crowd near us grew excited, being in the presence of local celebrities. Melissa put her cowboy hat back on, clutched her reins tightly, then prepared herself to ride. The gate of the chute flew open, and she and Sassafras took off like a shot. They tore around the barrels at a much faster pace than the previous competitors. My phone buzzed with a text. It was from Candace's phone. "It's Summer. Call me when you can." Obviously, Summer had borrowed her mother's phone, since her own phone had been trampled that morning. I returned my attention to the arena. Even in the brief moments that the text had distracted me, Melissa had covered a lot of ground. Despite the tension about the bear baiting, Evan and his parents were all enthusiastically rooting Melissa on. Melissa finished up, galloping at full speed across the finish line, then reining Sassafras to a stop near the chute where she had begun.
14.2 seconds, the announcer exclaimed. "That's a course record."
The crowd went wild. The Krautheimers all leaped to their feet to applaud Melissa, and most of the people in the stands did too. The rodeo clowns opened a gate that led out of the arena. Melissa rode through it, waving her hat to the crowd once again. The Krautheimers turned to us, looking proud of Melissa and embarrassed about the bear baiting all at once.
"We need to go down there to congratulate her," Sydney said.
"Of course," Dad said. "We'll save your seats."
Heidi gave Evan a pointed look. "You ought to come down too." I had no doubts that she really wanted him to show his support for his sister, but I assumed she was hoping to continue their conversation away from us as well. Evan nodded agreement, and all three Krautheimers moved to the nearest aisle. Local slapped Sydney on the back and shook his hand as they headed out. I told my parents, "I need to go call Summer. It's too loud here."
"Any word about JJ?" Mom asked.
"We'll see." I got up and headed out as well. The next barrel racer came out of the chute while I was heading through the stands. The crowd was so loud, I had to get far away to call Summer back. I ended up heading out toward the end of the arena, close to where the animal pens were. The barrel racing was coming to an end, and the bull riding was about to begin. This was the marquee event at the rodeo, similar to bronco busting, except that now the riders would be atop a 1,500-pound bull, bred solely for a bad temperament. The riders didn't even get a saddle, only a thick rope tied around the bull's chest, and they could only hold on with one hand. They had to stay on at least 8 seconds for the ride to count, and even that happened rarely. Serious injuries were possible, from being either thrown, gored, or trampled. The event was known as the most dangerous 8 seconds in sports. The bulls were kept in separate pens in preparation for the event, each with its name marked in chalk on a small slate. Most were obviously named to be imposing: Howitzer, Blockhead, Death on a Rope. Although I spotted an ironically named Tinkerbell as well. A few cowboys were delicately maneuvering an ornery, snorting behemoth named Grievous Bodily Harm out of his pen and into the bucking chute. There were far more contestants than tourists in this area, although a few visitors had come to see the livestock in the pens.
The bull riders were easily recognizable because they wore specialized vests to protect their chest from falls, goring, or trampling. Plus, they tended to be extremely muscular and were very quiet, almost meditative as they prepared for their event. Meanwhile, some other cowboys and cowgirls were practicing for the team roping competition, which was far less dangerous, although still very difficult. In that event, two riders on horseback would go after a steer at the same time. One would throw a lasso around its horns, and then the other would try to rope both its back legs. Whichever team did it the fastest won. A few of the contestants were practicing throwing their lassos at fake steers, getting the noose over their horns time and time again. Unlike the bull riders, they were relaxed and having fun, good-naturedly talking trash to one another. I suddenly recalled something that Jasmine had suggested that morning. Whoever had stolen the bison from the Oive Corral probably needed ranching experience and the ability to throw a lasso. It occurred to me that perhaps one, or maybe several, of those steer roping specialists had been involved in the crime. And then I found myself thinking that Zach probably had the connections in the community to recruit them, as well as a working knowledge of the ranch. However, at the moment, my priority was calling Summer back. I finally found the quietest spot at the rodeo, a stretch of dirt between the animal pens and the porta-potties. It was probably also the worst-smelling spot in the county, which explained why no one else was hanging out there. I was just about to dial Candace's number when I heard a familiar voice.
"Look at the size of those bulls, kids! Give me your phone, hun. I'm gonna get a picture."
It was Morton, the Toron who had been gored by the elk the day before. He was on crutches and had a large piece of padding in his shorts around his right buttock, which made it look as though the right half of his rear end was 5 times larger than the left. Other than that, he seemed none the worse for wear. In fact, he didn't seem to have learned anything from his experience, because he hobbled right over to the pen of a bull named Buzzsaw and promptly climbed up the fence around it, despite numerous signs warning him not to. His wife didn't see anything wrong with this. His kids didn't even notice. Despite all the activity around them, both were glued to their phones. It was a struggle for Morton to scale the fence with an injured buttock, but he managed. His presence agitated Buzzsaw, who snorted angrily, but Morton paid the bull no mind, lifting his wife's phone up for a selfie.
"Hey!" a cowboy shouted at him. "Can't you read? You're upsetting Buzzsaw."
Morton ignored him and snapped his photo anyhow.
"That bull's not a prop," the cowboy yelled. "It's a living animal."
"I'm not bothering him,"
Morton yelled back, staggeringly unaware that he was doing exactly that. He finally clambered back down off the fence, then grabbed his crutches and limped back to his wife.
"Jeez," he said, handing her phone back. "That cowboy's a real jerk, but I got some great photos."
I had to fight the urge to kick him in the rear end right where he'd been gored, but I called Summer instead. Even though I dialed Candace's phone, Summer answered.
"How's your dad?" I asked.
"He's out of the mine," she reported.
It sounded as though she was walking.
"And so are the others, but they're still on their way back here. Mom and I are going to the stables to meet them. They're okay, but pretty wiped out."
"That's great news," I said.
"I didn't make much progress with those names Ranger O gave us, though. I mean, I found some information on a lot of them, but I have no idea how to tell if any of these people would steal a bison. They all sound like normal ranchers. It's not like any of them has a criminal history or anything. Although George Wiley's son did go to prison for a little bit."
"For cattle rustling?" I asked hopefully.
"No, drug possession. I don't think that translates, really."
"It's still a criminal connection. That's something."
"But not much, sorry. How are things there?"
"Evan was right. His parents were doing the baiting, trying to lure bears to the ranch so your dad would get more excited to buy it. They were really embarrassed about everything, and they're worried about your father finding out."
"I'm not telling him. Not tonight, anyhow. He's had a rough enough day as it is."
"Really, the Krautheimers ought to be the ones to tell him, not you."
"Yeah, They should. Okay, I can see Dad coming with a rescue squad. I've got to go. Have fun there. All right, see you when I get home.
I hung up, then started back toward the stands. But as I turned around, I noticed another familiar face. Ike Spooner was wandering through the animal pens, taking a look at the bulls, along with an older man in standard local ranching attire. Ike had the same clothes on I'd seen him in earlier, the black cowboy hat and matching boots, as though maybe he hadn't been home. He didn't see me. He was too busy looking at the bulls, so I figured I would go over and say hello. Ike and the other man passed close to the chute with grievous bodily harm as I closed in on them. Ike peered through the metal slats and whistled appreciatively.
That's quite an animal. You into bucking bulls now? The other man asked. Getting tired of fooling around with bison?
There was undisguised contempt in his voice, making it clear that he didn't care for the bison at all. I decided not to interrupt. Instead, I stayed behind them, eavesdropping as they continued on.
Come on, George, Ike said. Bison are the future of ranching. They're perfectly evolved for this environment. They hold up better in the winter than cattle, and you don't have to pump them full of hormones.
My ears perked up at the name, and I wondered if the older man might be George Wiley himself.
They're wild animals, George told Ike dismissively, while cattle have been bred for domestication for 5,000 years.
You need to open your mind, Ike said. Why don't you come on by the ranch this week and see some of my new...
I didn't hear anything else, because at that very moment, chaos erupted. There was a loud clang from the chute holding grievous bodily harm, followed by a dozen cries of concern. I spun around to find that somehow the rear gate to the chute had come open, allowing Grievous to escape into the concourse. The 1,500-pound, exceptionally angry beast was loose, and he was charging right at me.